Welcome to the People Stack podcast, where we discuss the intersection of people, work, and technology. I'm your host, Jen Bunk, founder of Jen Bunk Ventures and creator of People Stack Academy, an online school dedicated to helping the tech community build better people processes. My guest for this episode is Carla Driscoll, the director of the Hollister Institute. Welcome, Carla, and thanks for being here.
It's great to be here, Jen.
Great. So why don't we get started straight away and just tell us a little bit about the work that you do at Hollister.
Hollister Institute is a new division, and our CEO and founder, Kip, has noticed in her interactions with the business community a gap in soft skills, in emotional intelligence, in mindfulness, and also around collaboration on teams, communication. And so she had a vision of developing an institute that could provide service to Boston and surrounding communities in those areas, because 85% of someone's job success is directly tied to their emotional intelligence. And as a staffing organization, she knew that only too well. Thus, she started Hollister Institute for us to begin to close that gap.
Great. And so what kind of work do you do as director of the Institute? I know that you run workshops and design those workshops. So can you tell us a little bit about your role?
Absolutely. I am in charge of all the content development, I was telling someone yesterday, I guess I'm like the chief cook and bottle washer right now of the Institute, because as a startup, I have to do everything in terms of making sure that we're properly marketed, networking in the community. Luckily, we have a great brand, Don't Know Me, in the Boston community. So I spend a lot of time at networking events like the one I met you at, Jen, just getting to know the community where they can get to know me and I can be the face of Hollister Institute.
Yeah, that's right. And I did want to mention that we did meet at a networking event and at Building a Best Place to Work Summit. And it was hosted by MassTLC. And I always like to give a hat tip to the folks at MassTLC, it's the Mass Technology Leadership Council, whenever I can, because they really do put out great stuff on and do wonderful work in terms of connecting the tech community in the Boston area. And also just to send the message that yes, folks do meet and make connections at these kinds of events. So get out there, get off the internet and meet some people in person.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So many people are afraid of networking, Jen. And I look at it as just a great opportunity to make new friends. There's nothing intimidating about it whenever you look at it as I'm just here to meet people and get to know what they do. And really, I like to attend networking events, especially being new to the Boston community. And I love getting to know the community and being out and about. And I see networking events as a great way to potentially be new friends. I don't see them as something scary and overwhelming.
Yeah. And I think for introverted folks like myself, I'm assuming you identify as an extrovert.
Yes, I am.
I'm more on the introverted end of the spectrum, so I can definitely relate to some of the challenges it is for introverts to connect with people, given the more inward focus. But yeah, I basically approach it the same way you do. I'm just making friends. I'm just meeting people. Maybe something will come of it. Maybe you won't. And you just take it one step at a time.
Absolutely.
All right. So I'm going to dive right in to some of the questions that I came up with for you. I'm going to start really big picture and very philosophical. So can you describe your workshop philosophy? How do you approach structuring workshops?
Absolutely. I believe that one thing that sets Hollister Institute apart from other training organizations is we approach our workshops from the place of transforming versus informative learning. So informative learning builds on what you already know. For example, you can't take Algebra 2 until you've mastered Algebra 1. And so you are building on something you already know. Transformative learning is giving you a completely new paradigm from which to operate. So all of our workshops are designed to give people a new paradigm professionally. They're also very experiential. So rather than it very heavy on lecture and content, I believe great content, it's also very interactive. We also utilize an ontological approach.
That's great. Can you define for our listeners and also for me, which I'm learning just about it right now, but what is the definition of an ontological approach?
Absolutely. Ontology is the study of who we as human beings are being. And at any given time, we can choose who we want to be. So an example, Jen, would be that whenever we were speaking earlier, you said that you identify yourself as an introvert, and I identify myself as an extrovert. And when we go to networking events, if you went to a networking event still being an introvert, you probably wouldn't be able to make as many connections. You make a choice when you walk into that networking event to shift your, what we call at Hollister Institute, your ground of being, and you become more outgoing than maybe you would at another given time. And that's a perfect example of how at any time we can choose who we want to be given the needs of that situation. We often limit ourselves from creating the results we want in life and work because we narrowly define ourselves according to a certain way of being. And in our workshops, we give people a new paradigm, a transformational view of the way they do life and work that gives them the freedom to choose at any given moment who they want to be. So all of our training is more, it comes from a place of being rather than doing. Does that make sense?
It really does. And I think it's empowering and it's enticing because the idea of being able to take control over, for example, how you react in particular situations and how you cope with stress, these kinds of things. But then even more at a higher level, I love the idea of being a quote unquote better me. How can I be a better version of myself? Mm-hmm. And it seems like that's a core message that you guys seem to be sending with this, the philosophy of your workshops, is that you can become a better version of yourself.
Absolutely. We provide a new way of seeing life that opens up new possibilities for our participants so that they are able to live their highest potential and to bring their A game to life and work. That's what's so fulfilling about what we do, is because we have people time and again who've come through our workshops that give us the same feedback. I never really believed that in myself and in my capabilities before I came to this workshop. Now I'm leaving with a new mindset that's going to empower me to create different results in my life and work.
It is amazing how much a shift in mindset can really, it's a domino effect, and it's a positive domino effect toward reaching the goals that you really want to reach. So as an entrepreneur myself, I think a lot about goals and what are my goals? Like, for example, sales goals. How much money do I want to make in the next, the next 6 months, a year? And I've seen a lot of stuff around, well, you can say I'm going to make $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, whatever it is, but why not shoot for further than that? So that's why it's kind of nice to see the models of the people who aren't the quote unquote typical results, right? But the people who make millions of dollars, and they talk about it from a perspective of, I'm just a regular person, I have kids too and I have family to manage, but I did this, and if I could do it, you can do it too. So why not set your sights a little bit higher and shift that mindset toward from small thinking to really
absolutely
thinking.
Absolutely. And we encourage people to begin to think as if you're already you've already created and you are living at the level of success that you desire. because we can't ever achieve a different level of success at our same level of thinking. So we encourage people that come through our workshops to begin to think of yourself, to act as if you've already created that six-figure income that allows you the time and financial freedom. And then your actions will come from that expanded way of thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's always interesting to me to think about for myself and to ask people about this, where our philosophies come from. With the ontological approach that you take and that you guys at Hollister take, I wonder basically where that came from. What was the birth of this? Is it something that's always been a part of Hollister? And if so, where did that come from?
That's a great question. Our founder, Kip, has always been she's a lifelong learner and enthusiast about going beyond the normal status quo, always has been looking for ways to grow and pursue excellence. And so it was within this mindset of pursuing excellence that she met a woman here in the Boston community named Francesca Radbill. And Francesca is trained in ontology. She's a transformational coach. And so she began working with Kip here at Hollister Staffing 7 or 8 years ago and began to bring this mindset into Hollister Staffing. And I was friends with Francesca. She was a coach for me for a while I still lived in Oklahoma, and knew that I was also pursuing this type of learning and approach in the sales coaching that I was doing out of my home. So it just made sense for the three of us to partner together initially to bring a workshop here to Boston that's based on ontology.
That's great. That's great. So again, it's all about connections with people. I love that.
Absolutely. I had never even been to Boston prior to 2012 when Kip first flew me up from Oklahoma to lead one of these two-day retreats with her staff and employees.
Great. And based on our conversations, I take it that you like it here in the Boston area.
Oh, we love it. We absolutely do. The diversity, the opportunity, the opportunity to be around people who are stimulating in their thought processes and their conversation. It's the history. It's amazing. We love it.
Yeah. I feel exactly the same way. So I'm going to shift the conversation a little bit because I'm really intrigued by the ontology and the ontological approach from a philosophical perspective. So we dug a little bit deeper in there, but I'm also interested in it from a process and a design perspective, because being a former academic, I have some experience teaching classes and designing classes. And it's always been interesting to me to talk to other folks in the training world, other folks who design these learning kinds of experiences, whatever the philosophical approach might be, and how you approach, how do you design? How do you get ideas for workshops? How do you get ideas for what to do during those workshops? And how do you test what's working and what's not? So I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about that. And I'd also like to talk about how the ontology might make it a little bit different than, say, the more traditional kind of learning and workshops we might be used to experiencing, like in the college setting or other kind of workshops. Not necessarily from the experience of the learner, but from your experience, the person designing that particular program.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I believe that we all have more information than we will ever be able to assimilate in a lifetime. I mean, this is an information age where it's at our fingertips. So we design all of our workshops from a place of encouraging and supporting people in making application of the information and looking at the information in a new way. We also design all of our workshops to accommodate mindfulness and meditation, because there is so much research right now that supports, there are over 3,000 studies that support how utilizing mindfulness and meditation in the workplace enhances the results that people are able to create. There are huge corporations that actually now have meditation rooms. Salesforce has a meditation room on every single floor of their building right now. And so we incorporate that and introduce that. Many people who come through our programs have never had an opportunity to even experience meditation, and they think of it as something kind of woo-woo and out there, rather than recognizing the medical benefits of it, how studies prove that it increases our emotional intelligence, it increases our gray matter, it decreases our stress, and it actually heightens employees' performance. So I would say that is one component of our workshops that's different from, say, an academic setting. Another, you asked how we come up with material for our workshops. We really listen to the people that come through our workshops. The first exposure that people have to Hollister Institute is usually through our two-day workshop, Excellence Unbound. And in that workshop, we cover a variety of topics, but at a very high level in terms of effective communication, accountability, stress management, work-life balance. And as a result of coming through this two-day program, we get feedback from our participants on what they would like to hear more of and anything that they would like a workshop that may spend more time focused on one of those areas. So the other workshops that we currently have in place that we go out and offer to the community are, we have a two-part effective communication workshop that deals with how we do conflict resolution and how to communicate collaboratively. And I believe what sets that workshop apart from maybe something that's in a more academic setting is we give the opportunity for role play, and we work through what we call framework exercises. That all of our workshops start out with giving people an awareness of where they are currently in relation to that topic, so that then they can see the gap between where they are and where they want to be, so that we are able to customize that workshop based on the specific needs of the participants in the moment.
Mm-hmm. So I want to dig a little deeper into these framework exercises, particularly with regard to work-life balance. You had mentioned that. So I'm wondering what kind of approach you guys take to work-life balance, and also what these framework exercises might look like.
Okay, great question. Well, first of all, at Hollister Institute, we like to use the terminology bringing your whole self to life and work. So that would be more along the idea of work-life integration. Because if we believe that there really is no such thing as work-life balance, whenever something is completely balanced, really there's no movement there. The only way you can even have forward movement, even in walking, is you have to shift your balance from one foot to the other. There is no perfect balance. What we can achieve is an understanding and facility around bringing our whole self to every activity, being fully present in the moment. For instance, I have 4 children, and prior to moving here, I had a business out of my home. So I worked in my home. I lived in my home. All of my children were there with me. And it was an exercise and a muscle that I developed of whenever I'm with my children, I was completely with my children in that moment. I didn't have a part of me in the office still completing emails or my cell phone where it could distract me from being fully present in the moment with my children. By the same token, whenever I'm at work, I want to bring my whole self, all of my energies to what I'm doing in my workplace. So that would mean that I am leaving the stress of home at home. So in our seminars, we teach people to look at, and we support them in looking at all the different areas of their life. So for instance, I'm a mother, I'm a wife, I'm a friend, I still have a consulting business outside of what I do here at Hollister Institute, and I'm a director of Hollister Institute, I'm a sister, I'm a daughter. So I wear all these different hats. And then we encourage our participants to look at each of those areas and rate themselves on a scale of 1 to 5, with 5 being, I feel like I'm doing a great job in this area. 1 being, I'm not paying enough attention to this area. And then coming up with action steps that would allow them to feel like they are paying attention, giving necessary attention to all the parts of their life, so that they can be living from a whole heart as a whole self. Does that make sense?
It totally does. And I did, when I was teaching undergraduates, and I would teach about workplace stress and work-life balance, one of the exercises I used to have my students do, so this was in the live classroom, it's not an online class. I don't think it would work in an online class, and you'll see why in a second. But this was in person, and what I would have them do is exactly what you just said, is think of all the hats that you wear. But I had almost, they made physical hats, so I gave them pieces of paper, and then they wrote down, you know, I'm a student, I'm a community worker, you know, I'm a sister, I'm, you know, I'm a part-time worker at McDonald's, and all of these things. And I would have them put them on their desks in front of them. And then, you know, you sort of, they look around the room, and I never really said it this way, but the idea of let's appreciate our whole selves, you know, I totally could have said that to them, but that was essentially the message that I was sending, is take a look around the room. These are your fellow students. We all wear many hats. So let's appreciate that, so we can get to know each other, one another better. But I also had them do a very similar exercise in terms of thinking about, are there particular areas of your life where you want to spend more time on? And it could be, with a particular person in a particular context, or it could be, I encourage them to identify one hat as sort of the self, the me time hat. Some people neglect that. A lot of people neglect that, actually. That, am I spending enough time by myself? You know, maybe it's just taking a walk around the community, or maybe it's, you know, just enjoying a bubble bath, or whatever it is, right? But I encourage them to think about that too. So yes, I can definitely relate to what you're talking about, and I think it's very powerful to do that, because we don't ask ourselves those kinds of questions quite often enough.
Exactly. And what we find is that so many people have a view of life that is either or. Either I can have a successful career, or I can have great relationships with my friends and family. And by coming from a bringing your whole self to life and work philosophy, we support and encourage the participants in Hollister Institute to embrace a both and view of life. I can have a great business and great relationships. I can be healthy and still have time to invest in my work and my family. So that's one of those transformational paradigm shifts that we seek to provide the participants in our workshops.
Mm-hmm. So I want to go back to something you said earlier. I want to run an idea by you. You seem to be an appropriate person to run this idea by. I'd love your thoughts on this. When you talk about balance, talking about the idea of work-life balance, that when you think of balance, there's no movement. Like, so if you think of a scale, when it's perfectly balanced, there's no movement. Right. And I definitely relate to that. So if you think of that view of balance, then no, that's definitely not what we're going for. Life is a series of decisions and micro steps and micro adjustments. The way that I think of balance, and I don't know if this is because I'm a devoted yoga practitioner or what, but when I think of balance, I think of it more as a verb, that it's the act of balancing. That when you're trying to balance on one foot, for example, actually, if you're doing it right, you're not perfectly still. You're making those micro adjustments, even if it's in like the small muscles of your feet. That's one of the things that I think at the very beginning that people get wrong when they're trying to learn to actually balance in yoga, is that they think that you're supposed to be perfectly still when actually you need to be moving those muscles around even ever so slightly. So I like that metaphor in terms of thinking about balancing life, because it's about, it is about that forward movement. It is about every moment, moment by moment, making those micro adjustments in your life to decide, what am I going to spend my time on? What am I going to let bother me versus not? So that's my view on it anyway.
Oh, that, I love that. I've never thought of it that way, Jen. That, I really love that. That's beautiful.
Great. I'm glad somebody connects with it. You never know. You have these crazy ideas and like, oh no, Jen, oh, you're way off base, but I appreciate it.
Yeah. I love it. Even though I'm terrible at yoga, I can get an idea of what you're talking about from my very limited experience with yoga. Yeah.
That's interesting though, that, that you don't, that you haven't. So do you meditate yourself? You talked about
doing what you do. I do. I meditate daily and I find it so as important to me as physical exercise, doing that mental exercise and that mental discipline. In fact, we even have a meditation room here at Hollister Staffing that Kip leads guided meditation twice a week for the staff here.
Wonderful. That's wonderful. Although I do try to be as consistent as possible with my yoga practice. I do meditate as part of my yoga practice at the end of my practice. I've never been very successful in starting a separate meditation practice, which I've always kind of wanted to do. And I have lots of friends and folks in my network now who have lots of expertise around it. I actually have a friend who I'm trying to get on the podcast who started a new mindfulness meditation consulting firm. So he's basically going to work with tech companies in the tech community and focus just on that. And so there's just this wonderful world around mindfulness and meditation that's blossoming. So I think it might be time for me to get on the boat and start doing it sooner rather than later.
Well, I started out with just doing meditation just for 6 minutes a day. I set my timer for 6 minutes and have grown from there. Sometimes I do 15, sometimes 20, but there are a lot of great even meditation audios on YouTube that you can utilize, which are just guided meditations that I find very helpful.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to check those out. Okay. So I'm going to shift the conversation a little bit now. Given that the idea of the People Stack podcast is to talk about people and work and technology, I always like to throw in a little bit of each. So we've definitely talked about people, we've talked about work and the intersection between the two. But I want to throw technology into the pot a little bit here and stir it up a little bit. Potentially, let's see how this goes. Away, I'm trying to make a segue here. We'll see if it works. PowerPoint. PowerPoint is a technology that people seem to have a love-hate relationship with. Especially from a trainer's perspective and from the learner's perspective, from the participant's perspective. Oh no, not another set of PowerPoint slides with a bunch of bullet points. So I'm wondering what your approach to PowerPoint is, if you use it at all, if you do, how you see it as helpful or not.
Well, we do use PowerPoint, and our PowerPoints are primarily pictures that can evoke an emotional connection. Our brain stores memories in pictures. And so once again, in keeping with the experiential nature of our workshops, we want our PowerPoints to make an emotional connection with the participant. So we have very little text and just something that's going to serve as an anchor in the participant's subconscious so that they'll be able to receive the information more fully.
Got it. And where do you find the images? Are these images that you guys create yourselves, or do you go to the one of the many freebie sites that has lots of free pictures?
One of the many freebie sites that has lots of free pictures.
Yes, I love Unsplashed, just because their license is basically use it, change it, we don't care, go ahead. So I love Unsplashed. And another recent one that I just signed up for is called Death to the Stock Photo. And it's free to sign up for, and they send you a zip file with a bunch of photos that you're free to use. I think it's supposed to be like once a month, but every once in a while they'll say, hey, we have some more for you. So that's another one. I haven't used any of their photos yet. It's almost like it's too many. It's overwhelming. But the next time that I find myself needing a nice, I love that idea of the emotional connection, right? And that anchor, right? So I think that that's important, whether you're talking about live material or a live workshop or any kind of content, like even if it's a tweet or a Facebook post or an article that you post online. It's why people are doing that now, that the articles that really seem to draw you in are the ones of an emotionally inducing photograph on the top.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We crave connection as human beings. And so we really look for images in our PowerPoints that the majority of our audience can feel some sort of connection to.
Yeah, and I sometimes struggle with that. I think I sometimes overthink it, that I think that there needs to be some sort of connection between what's in the photograph and what's in the material that I'm talking about. And I think that sort of my approach to this is it needs to be a little bit relevant, but it doesn't need to be like you don't have to overthink it, right? You know, so I might, if I'm talking about leadership or motivation, I like using it's a photograph of, it's a shadow of a person who's jumping over something else, right? So you see the shadow of the person, and then, so it's sort of like overcoming obstacles, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that as long as it's something like that, or maybe it's just a picture of a tall building or somebody going up to the top of a tall building or reaching new heights, anyway, I think I sometimes overthink that in terms of finding photographs.
There is definitely a balance, because I sometimes don't think it enough, and I'll have a coworker look at some of the things I've put together and they say, Carla, what are you trying to say with this picture? Because it's not working. So that's why it's great to have a teammate that has your opposite strength.
Absolutely.
Balance you out.
And also related to technology, I believe that one of the core populations that you guys service at Hollister is the tech community. So you guys have folks from the tech community who attend your workshops?
Absolutely. Yes, we do have people. And specifically, what we find is that many companies that have a large tech population recognize the need to support their employees around some of what people might call the softer skills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's great to see that acknowledgement we need help there. And that everybody needs help there, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We
work with accounting firms as well and architectural firms, where people might traditionally think they're more linear in their approach to business. We work with those type of firms as well.
So back to the tech community, do you see patterns in terms of, are there specific kinds of challenges that you see folks in the tech community coming up against time and time again? Or does it seem to be more specific to the individual or the company?
Well, I would say the biggest challenge as a whole is around effective communication, because while I believe technology has enhanced our life in so many arenas, I think an argument could be made that there's less face-to-face connection or actual interaction, so that diminishes the effectiveness of communication across across industries. I also do sales training and with Hollister Staffing. And so many of the new employees that we get don't even know how to have a conversation over the phone because all they do is text. So whenever I'm listening and giving them feedback around how they occur when they're making a phone call, they have often said to me, I never talk on the phone. I only text. So there's a gap around effective communication for sure across all industries.
So if someone were to come to you and say, I need help, as I stumble over my words, I'm aware of the irony here. I need help communicating better. I need help being a more effective communicator. What would be your number one piece of advice to that person?
My number one piece of advice would be to practice being authentic and being in someone else's listening. So if I talk with someone who has difficulty broaching a subject and being in face-to-face communication, then my first recommendation is that you call out the white elephant in the middle of the room and say, you know, I've got to be honest. I feel a little nervous right now. I am not used to addressing these situations face-to-face, and begin practicing authenticity and vulnerability with the people in your life, because it's a skill, it's a muscle that then can transfer into your professional life. And then also part of emotional intelligence is being able to practice empathy. So begin to put yourself in someone else's spot, in their listening, and role play that in your mind. If you're going to go to that person with a request or to resolve a conflict and come from a place of looking for a collaborative solution, the idea of coming to understand rather than to be understood is really a foundational piece of effective communication.
That's great. That's great advice, that in terms of the being authentic and showing your vulnerability, but also, I guess maybe to sum up what you said, don't be so much in your own head, be in the other person's head as well, so that you can, not that you literally can do that, but so that you're aware. And this brings us back to mindfulness too, right? So that you're not only aware of what you're saying, but you're aware of how the other person is perceiving what you're saying, so that you can really be in that zone where you can really establish a rapport with the person. And that's when awesome stuff happens, right? Where you're really in sync with the other person, and you can really start coming up with more creative ideas and not have to worry about stumbling over words or understanding one another, but you can move beyond that.
So absolutely. And I think there are so many resources available that people can turn to that can strengthen their communication skills. One of my favorite books is by John Maxwell, and it's Everyone Communicates But Few Connect. So it teaches the art of connection, because while content, what we say, may move and influence some people, how we say what we say and our ability to connect has a much stronger influence over coming to a collaborative solution rather than just what we say.
Yep. And I think that brings us back to what we were talking about at the beginning in terms of connections and going to networking events and making friends, that there really is, there seems to be, there's almost like this backlash now happening against the internet, right? That there's been this boom of, you know, so this was maybe 5 or 10 years ago, of, you know, the internet is really booming in terms of new ways to communicate through, you know, through text and video conferencing and of course email and all of that stuff, synchronous and asynchronous online communication. But now there seems to be this backlash against it because people are realizing the value of human connection. And mm-hmm. I say this completely aware of the fact that we are not face-to-face to one another right now. Although I see your face on the computer screen, it's not the same as being in person.
Exactly.
All right, so we are just about up on time. Do you have any final thoughts before we end our chat for the day?
Well, one way that we end a lot of our workshops is by referring to one of my favorite authors, Brendan Burchard. And he says, at the end of your life, you'll ask yourself three questions. Did I live? Did I love? And did I matter? And at Hollister Institute, we want to provide support for individuals and teams that allow them to answer yes to each of those questions, because we really, our mission is to provide training that ignites and inspires people to live their highest potential.
I love that. That's a great message. So thank you so much for chatting with me today, Carla. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for the opportunity, Jen.
Yeah, no problem. And that wraps up another episode of the PeopleStack podcast. Check out my website, jenbunk.com. That's JenBunk.com, where you can find lots of goodies, including a link to PeopleStack Academy, my online school dedicated to helping the tech community build better people processes. Also on jenbunk.com, you can sign up for the Changelog, the PeopleStack weekly email with tips and exclusive offers only available to my email tribe. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.